Okay, welcome back to Healthspan. This is part one of How Not to Age by Dr. Michael Greger. I realize I haven't uploaded since January, but I'm finally back with another book. And I've covered a book by Dr. Michael Greger before. That was How Not to Diet. That's with episodes 21 through 25 if you want to take a listen to those. Going into this book, I knew that he was going to have a bias. Dr. Michael is vegan. He's one of the biggest proponents of a vegan diet. So I already knew this book was going to have some bias. But because I'm so interested in aging, I'd also like his perspective on the book. His inspiration for writing this book, How Not to Age, was a consensus document titled Interventions to Slow Aging in Humans that was compiled by top researchers in the anti-aging medicine field like Dr. Fontana, Dr. Walter Longo, Dr. Sinclair, and dozens of others. And nearly everyone who's anyone in the field of anti-aging or aging, they brought together to identify the most promising strategies for developing drugs to combat aging. And then they identified a list of essential pathways, for example, like the pharmacological inhibition of hormone IGF-1 or drugs to block, you know, the enzyme mTOR. And as he looked through the list, he realized that every single one of these pathways that they discussed in that interventions to slow aging in humans could be regulated through diet. And that became really the opening section of the book. So he does begin the book with part one, which is slowing 11 pathways of aging. And he asked the question, how important are your genes? So there's always an inside joke when it comes to aging about how to extend your lifespan. One of the best ways to do it is to choose your parents. And he puts that only about 15 to 30% or less of your lifespan appears determined by our genes, which means how we live our lives may determine the bulk of our destiny. To leverage the lifespan leeway we have beyond the relatively small genetic component, we must first understand the various aging pathways. So I love that literally the second page of this book deals with the cell signaling pathways, which is the thing that I'm most interested in. And he begins with the AMPK. So AMP kinase, the enzyme found in your cells that turns on when we are in a low energy state, and it's a regulator that helps with inhibiting gluconeogenesis and glycogenolysis, increasing fatty acid oxidation and stopping the synthesis of fatty acids. It helps with the autophagy process, which we get to a little bit later. We know it helps with regulation of GLUT4. It helps activate mitochondrial biogenesis. It does all these things. So I'm glad he starts with AMPK. And it is one of the master energy sensors that really antagonizes the mTOR signaling pathway, which we get through later. So AMPK, there are three main ways longevity researchers establish an aging pathway. Does the factor worsen with age? If you amplify it, does it accelerate aging? And if you dampen it, does it slow aging and thereby extend lifespan? The loss of AMPK activity as we age fits all three of these criteria. As we grow older, AMPK levels drop and it gets harder to activate, harder to flip the switch to recharge our batteries. He uses this battery example in his previous books, like How Not to Diet, about how when we are in a low energy level, like a calorie restricted level, when we're exercising, we're like in a low like battery energy, and that causes activation of AMPK. That's his analogy. And when this decline in AMPK is exacerbated, aging is hastened. But when the process is reversed and AMPK activation is boosted, lifespan is extended in model organisms by as much as 38% in C. elegans, as he puts here. Up and down the evolutionary tree of life, the most reliable way to extend lifespan may be long-term food restriction. We know calorie restriction is one of the most potent activators of AMPK. AMPK activation is thought to be one of the mechanisms for the longevity boost from calorie restriction. AMPK activators can effectively fool the body into thinking it's in a starvation mode, switching it into a protective house cleaning mode without causing any pangs of deprivation. In this way, AMPK activators can be considered dietary restriction mimetics or imitators. That's why AMPK is considered a druggable target for longevity, with pharmaceutical companies producing a variety of AMPK activators For example, metformin. We all know metformin. This is the mechanism by which metformin works through various mechanisms, but the main mechanism is through, you know, the inhibition of complex 1 of the mitochondrial chain and then activating AMPK. Since AMPK is activated by a fuel shortage, if we don't want to limit the amount of energy going in through our mouths, as in eating food, then we ramp up the amount of energy going out through our muscles. So we know that exercise itself can be an AMPK activator. If you put people on bikes and take muscle biopsies while they cycle, a near tripling of AMPK activity can be detected within 20 minutes. We also know we get activation of, you know, the PGC1 alpha pathway that helps with mitochondrial biogenesis, which again, mitochondrial dysfunction itself is one of the hallmarks of aging. As I mentioned, metformin or glucophage is one of the AMPK activators. And the only way to determine if metformin's benefits outweigh its risks for expanding the health span and lifespan of non-diabetics is to put it to the test. So this is what Nir Barzilay is doing in his TAME trial, which is the targeting aging with metformin. And this study is either starting or ongoing, and the results should be, you know, coming back within the next couple of years about how exactly, you know, metformin targets all the hallmarks of aging, as well as impacts all the leading causes of death like cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, and then you have your, you know, your type 2 diabetes as well, which kind of augments all those other things that I mentioned. We know barberries are also good for activating AMPK. In short, barberries, which can be found in inexpensively priced at like Middle Eastern grocery stores in dried forms, have been shown to successfully lower LDL, improve acne, artery function, lower triglycerides, and improve our blood sugar and insulin resistance. So we know barberries are also very good for activating AMPK. There's also black cumin. Black cumin is a known AMPK activator. He also talks about hibiscus and lemon verbena tea, and also vinegar. So apple cider vinegar itself is a potent activator AMPK. And if you cannot tolerate apple cider vinegar, like I can't tolerate apple cider vinegar, we can get it from fiber-rich foods. So we know when we consume fiber-rich foods, this fiber gets broken down, we get production of short-chain fatty acids. And again, this is like acetic acid, for example, is one of the short-chain fatty acids that gets produced. And again, this through our gut microbe somehow activates the sparking of AMPK by colon-producing acetic acid, one of the short-chain fatty acids, is suspected to play a role in some of the metabolic benefits of eating a high-fiber diet, for example, you know, lots of fruits and vegetables. The next section is all about the autophagy. So we know AMPK helps activate the autophagy process. The conservation of autophagy machinery over a billion years of biological evolution underscores the importance of this universal recycling program, so much so that in 2016, the discovery of the autophagy process was actually awarded a Nobel Prize, you know, for able to tease out exactly how it works. It was awarded a Nobel Prize in 2016. And it seems like all the rage these days that people talk about autophagy, and it is a very critical process for, you know, most lifespan enhancing interventions, whether through diet, drugs, or genetic manipulations. If autophagy pathways are blocked, so too are many of the pro-longevity effects. What's more, autophagy appears to be not only necessary for lifespan extension, but also in some cases sufficient. Boosting autophagy, he puts here, alone can lengthen lifespan in mice by an average of 17%, as well as improve their health span. So autophagy is very important for the longevity process itself, and we know blocking it can also halt, you know, the longevity benefits. So foods that may impair autophagy, he talks about saturated fat. A lot of these saturated fat helps suppress the autophagy process. And also he talks about anything that basically activates mTOR. You know, mTOR and AMPK, these are antagonistic pathways, more or less. And simplistically speaking, they are antagonistic pathways. So anything that's going to activate mTOR is going to effectively inhibit the autophagy process. And when study participants completed a fast for 36 hours, and they were given a whey protein drink, their autophagy levels were suppressed significantly more than if they were just given even calories like from straight carbohydrates. So definitely activation of mTOR, anything that helps activate the mTOR pathway, will help suppress this autophagy process. Some foods that may boost autophagy, he begins with coffee. So coffee is a great autophagy booster. It's a potent, you know, autophagy stimulant, and it's beneficial for our overall health as well. So interventional studies on rats showing that coffee can improve lifespan go back to all the way back to the 1940s. We know coffee helps with our lifespan. We only have observational research on coffee on and mortality in humans, but to date, more than 20 studies following more than 10 million individuals over time have found that overall, those drinking 3 cups of coffee a day had 13% lower risk of death from any cause. So 13% from any cause, all-cause mortality. Coffee contains more than 1,000 bioactive compounds, and the polyphenol chlorogenic acid is the most abundant antioxidant found in these coffee beans. So chlorogenic acid. So researchers really started there to find out the benefits of coffee, and indeed found that it was able to enhance autophagy in human cells that were, you know, cultured. Apparently, this is again where the bias comes in a little bit. He puts that adding dairy milk or creamer may actually undercut some of the coffee benefits. So the milk protein casein, so the protein found in milk casein, it binds to this chlorogenic acid and thereby may block its absorption in the digestive tract, thus reducing the amount of autophagy. So, you know, of course, this is where the bias comes in, that he doesn't think you should put any creamer or milk in your coffee. And actually, I don't do that either. I drink my coffee straight black. That's just how I like it. And I guess, you know, it's been benefiting me this entire time. He then talks about spermidine. So spermidine is one of the most potent autophagy molecules that we've discovered. So in 1676, Antoine van Leeuwenhoek, the father of microscopy, was the first person in history to see bacteria. The following year, he actually looked at his own sperm and he discovered tiny crystals forming in the semen he had left kind of sitting around. And centuries later, this compound would be recognized as spermine. So that's where the name comes from. So it and its precursor, spermidine, are actually found throughout the body. So their names are just kind of an accident of history. And it was independently discovered in the brain tissue in 1885. And they named it neuridine. But when it was revealed to be the same as spermine, the naming rights kind of defaulted back to its indelicate origin, you know, of Leeuwenhoek looking at his own sperm. So spermidine, it plays a key role in regulating cell growth. We know the absence of spermidine can actually halt the cell cycle through like growth cessation at the G1 phase of the cell cycle. So we know it's very important for regulating cell growth and division. And the spermidine in our tissues is obtained from 3 different sources. So our cells can make it from scratch from one of the amino acids called arginine. And certain bacteria in our gut can also make it, or we can get it, you know, preferred through our diet. We can get a lot of spermidine through our diet. And certain foods are naturally rich in spermidine. And I'm going to go through the list of the foods that are really high in spermidine. So tempeh is the highest food in with spermidine. Mushrooms, mangoes, edamame, green peas, lentil soup, soybeans, lettuce, broccoli, chickpeas, cauliflower. These are all great sources of spermidine. He goes to talk about how, you know, this, I know I keep going on about spermidine, but I never realized how beneficial it was for autophagy and our health until I really read this book. So how exactly is spermidine activating autophagy? So it happens through various mechanisms. The first one that I read about was through inhibition of this acetyltransferase called EP300. EP300 is an acetyltransferase that itself is an inhibitor of autophagy. And it's So if we're inhibiting an inhibitor of autophagy, we're getting more activation. And it's kind of comparable to the potency of rapamycin. I read in one of the articles that spermidine is as potent as rapamycin for the autophagy process. We also see that certain autophagy-related genes, we call them ATGs, like ATG 7, 15, and 11, were upregulated with spermidine supplementation. And the last mechanism by which spermidine activates autophagy is through inducer of certain transcription factors, namely EIF5A. And when this transcription factor gets activated, we get an increase of another transcription factor called TFEB. And this TFEB is kind of the master regulator of formation of the autophagosome. So whenever we think about autophagy, we need to think about what's actually going on in our cell. We get these cellular debris, and we have these lysosomes that have enzymes in them, and we get this autophagosome where these lysosome enzymes help degrade the particles that are being degraded and recycled. That's how autophagy works. And again, there's a whole article that I read about how spermidine is also beneficial for our general health. Like, we know it's an anti-inflammatory effect. It helps reduce the TNF-alpha expression and also reduce our CRP. So it's extremely beneficial. And there's studies out there, too, showing that this is one of the most potent molecules. So 800 men and women in their 40s through 80s were followed for 20 years. Researchers looked at 146 different nutrients in their diet, and the component most predictive of longevity was spermidine. Those who consumed the most spermidine didn't just have a low risk of dying from cardiovascular disease, but spermidine intake was also associated with all major causes of death. So not just cardiovascular disease, but all major causes of death. So how big of an effect are we talking about? The mortality rates of those in the top third of spermidine intake, so those who consumed about 12 milligrams a day, was compared to those in the bottom third who consumed less than 9 milligrams a day. And the difference in death rate was as if those eating more spermidine were about 5.7 years younger than the bottom third. So there's a huge lifespan extension through consuming, at least in this study, 12 milligrams of spermidine. And again, you get this stuff from tempeh, mushrooms, natto, mango, edamame, green peas. These are all great sources of spermidine. So I think I've talked about spermidine enough, and I should probably move forward to the next section. And the next section is all about cellular senescence. So cellular senescence is another major hallmark of aging. 50 years ago, there was a scientist, his name was Leonard Hayflick, and he demonstrated that cells only divide about 50 times before entering an irregular cell cycle arrest we call cellular senescence. Senescence itself comes from the word senex, which means growing old. This natural Hayflick limit, the 50 divisions of a cell, helps protect the body against cancer. We know uncontrolled cell growth and proliferation is one of the hallmarks of cancer itself. So in that sense, cellular senescence is a protective mechanism against developing cancer, essentially. And what happens when natural human lifespan, you know, that we experienced back hundreds of years ago, like we all died at age 30, what happens when we extend it to age 80 or 90 or 100? Well, we get accumulation of these senescent cells that are just really sitting around. And the other name for senescent cells that you may hear from David Sinclair or other longevity experts is zombie cells. They call them zombie cells because instead of being inactive and just kind of sitting there not doing anything, we know that they are actively damaging surrounding tissues as a zombie would. You know, they're secreting pro-inflammatory cytokines. We call them SASPs, senescence-associated secretory phenotype. These are the IL-1, IL-6, TNF that are being secreted from these senescent cells and causing damage to surrounding tissue. And there's a lot of aging-related diseases like osteoarthritis that are associated with accumulation of these senescent cells. So how exactly are we going to clear out these senescent cells? And researchers proved cause and effect by transplanting senescent cells from older mice into younger ones. And all it took were a few of these cells to cause persistent age-related physical dysfunction and quintupling of their mortality. Conversely, clearing even a fraction of senescent cells from these mice helped kind of really delay the tumor development and age-related organ deterioration. And of course, these are where senolytic compounds come into play. So senolytic compounds, for example, quercetin is a senolytic compound. This was discovered by Albert Sens Georgi in 1936, who found that, you know, quercetin, which is really abundant in onions, kale, and apples, the senolytic compounds like quercetin really helps get rid of these senescent cells. And it was just one small apple a week reduced cellular senescence and actually improved the health span of aging mice. For example, they actually experienced less hair loss, had enhanced heart function, and actually gained greater athletic endurance into their equivalent of a 60-year-old human. Quercetin gets its name from quercus, which is it's like an oak tree, basically. But it can be considered widespread in a lot of plant-based foods. So even iceberg lettuce, there's a lot of plant-based foods like as I mentioned, onions, kale, apples, these have high amounts of quercetin. There's also fisetin or fisetin. Some people pronounce it as fisetin. They can also increase lifespan of mice even when begun later in life. When started at age roughly equivalent to 75 in human years, fisetin actually extended the average and maximum lifespan of older mice by 75%. Markers of cellular senescence and those senescence-associated secretory phenotypes were significantly reduced in all analyzed tissue in conjunction with a reduction in age-related pathology in those taking the fisetin. And again, where do we get fisetin? One of the best sources is strawberries. So if you remember those foods, strawberries, onions, kale, and apples, you'll get your senolytics in, and I think you should be consuming this every day for your general health. So moving forward to the next section is epigenetics. So I really like that he's kind of going through the hallmarks of aging. Epigenetic alteration is a hallmark of aging. The term epigenetics was coined in the 1940s before we even knew the physical nature of genes. This was a full decade before, you know, the whole Watson and Crick DNA discovery. So epigenetics, which again literally means above genetics, layers an extra information on top of our DNA coding sequence. So we have about 50,000 genes, and these genes are regulated by certain methylation and acetylation patterns, which are like small tags. And again, it helps open and close our DNA. It helps with DNA expression. I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of epigenetics, but that is the basis of how it works. In the gene expression modulation by interventions with nutrition and lifestyle, otherwise known as the Geminal study, Dr. Dean Ornish and colleagues took tissue biopsies before and after subjects were subjected to intensive lifestyle changes for 3 months, which included a whole food plant-based diet. Beneficial changes in gene expression were noted for 500 different genes. The expression of disease-preventing genes was boosted, and the oncogenes that promote breast cancer and prostate cancer were suppressed. No matter the genes we may have inherited from our parents, we can affect how these genes affect our health with what we eat and how we live. That is the power of epigenetics. Same DNA, but with different results. So through a whole food plant-based diet, through exercise, we can actually modulate our epigenetics and help control the expression of our genes that we were born with. So I think that's pretty fascinating. He then talks about the epigenetic clock. We know some stuff that speed and slow the biological aging process. Cigarette smoking, obviously, is accelerating our aging process, and until recently, calorie restriction had yet to be tested in people, but it had been shown to slow epigenetic aging in mice and monkeys. And then all the way, I guess, back, not too long ago, 2018, we finally had a study showing how calorie restriction affects the epigenetic clock. This was the calorie trial. The calorie trial, which I talked about in True Age, another book that I covered, was the first major randomized trial of calorie restriction in humans. Using non-epigenetic estimates of biological aging, the control group continued to age at a rate of about 1 year per year, but in that time, the dietary restriction group only seemed to age about 1 month, and they achieved this with only a 12% calorie reduction. So again, control group aged 1 year per year, whereas the calorie-restricted group, the 12% reduction in calories, aged 1 month per year. Aging rates were slowed in the dietary restriction group independent of weight loss, but obesity had been associated with, you know, epigenetic age acceleration and sample of liver tissue and deep abdominal fat. So what I'm trying to get at is the lifestyle factor most closely associated with slowing aging, even more than exercise, is again this calorie restriction. And we know, like, we also want high amounts of this, like, whole food plant-based diet, like fruits and vegetables, and also blood level, high amounts of, like, beta carotene he mentions here. So an epigenetic diet would really focus on consuming more of these fruits and vegetables. On the other hand, the food most consistent with accelerated aging is meat. And again, it's getting back to the biases. And I'm really trying to take this book with a grain of salt. I know there's going to be a lot of bias going forward. So that kind of finishes the epigenetic section here. And I'm running kind of long, so I'll go ahead and stop the podcast here. And I'll pick up next episode by discussing about, you know, more causes of aging, what we see with, you know, more of these hallmarks of aging like glycation, and I'll talk about other signaling pathways like IGF, the sirtuin, mTORs. I'll get into all of that next podcast. So thank you for being patient. Hopefully I can upload more frequently, but I hope you enjoyed something about this book, How Not to Age. I recommend checking it out. There's a lot of people putting out aging books. I think this is one of the better ones. There's a lot of scientific data in this book, a lot of explanations about how exactly our lifestyle impacts our aging process. So I hope you tune in for the next episode, and thank you for listening.